Game On 2FM with Green Farm. Being up to 90 isn't real. The protein in our range is. Get real.
Thanks to Laura Fox. It's Wednesday, the 2nd of February, and this is Game On. Coming up today, the Old Firm Derby takes place this evening in front of a packed Celtic Park.
Collins with a cross.
This isn't an easy chance, and it's a magnificent strike. He sets that outside the post, and he's got enough bend in it, Bum, to just curl it past the goalkeeper into the far corner. A goal truly deserved.
Pádraic Maher announced his retirement from inter-county hurling this week. Actually, from all hurling this week, Marty Morrissey caught up with the Tipperary great a little bit earlier.
You know, usually enough, when a player retires from inter-county, they have to go back to their club and give a good 2 or 3 years service after. And look, unfortunately, I can't do that. And but look, I'll be around the place. I'll be willing to help out, and I'll be involved some way anyway.
Plus, we have our Aldi giveaway. Do tune in for that. Paul Corrie is in studio to talk football, and Aoife Sheehan will preview the Littlewoods Leagues. If you want to get in touch, you can text us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM.
GameOn 2FM.
Now, Paul Corrie is with me here in studio. Paul, we do have an Old Firm Derby to look forward to a little bit later on. It sounds like it's going to be an absolute cracker. There is so much at stake, with Rangers 2 points clear at the top, Celtic aiming to close that gap and to take top spot for the first time this season. It's going to be absolutely packed. The allocation of tickets, as always, will mostly go to Celtic. There'll be a few Rangers fans will get in, but it will be dominated by Celtic fans. But when you have a game like this in the middle of the week and there isn't really anything else on, you know it's going to be packed. You know that even though the football mightn't be amazing, when there's such a big prize, it's going to be enthralling. Well, it should be anyway.
Nah, it should be. It's perfectly set up, Maria. You know, you mentioned there, you know, with the Premier League being on a break, no Champions League football, all eyes are on Scotland tonight. And it couldn't have been set up any more perfectly. Off the back of the weekend, Ross County equalising in the last minute against Rangers, a terrible mistake by McGregor, and Celtic winning in basically the last minute, or one of the last kick of the game, down to 10 men against Dundee. It sets it up perfectly. There's only 2 points separating them in the table. Rangers record, Marie, over the last 8 or 9 games is really strong against Celtic, and that surprises me. And you're to think, with the way that league tends to play out, the games against each other tend to decide where that title goes. Will Celtic be able to do enough at home tonight? I certainly hope so. I think the football they're playing has been really progressive over the last number of months, and you know, really fresh ideas and fresh faces coming into that league. So a massive fixture, and with no other football on tonight, I'd say the majority of Dublin and the majority of Ireland be tuning in.
Absolutely. So when you're in a situation like the Rangers players will be tonight, like, it's overwhelmingly Celtic fans in there, what does it feel like, and how much difference does it make for the Celtic players knowing that and seeing and feeling that support behind you?
Yeah, it's a very good point. I think, you know, I've never been over to one of those games, but even if I go back to my own league debut, was against Celtic, or against Celtic, I wish it was against Leeds in a Yorkshire derby in Sheffield, and just having the momentum and the energy of the crowd behind you can sometimes steer you through maybe difficult moments, and then when you're on top, maybe be that extra man to push you on. I think from Rangers, what you're trying to do is you're trying to stifle that crowd, particularly when you're going away from home, frustrate them, stay within the game, keep it tight, keep it compact, and try not give the fans or the players anything to kind of latch onto. But you know, these games, like, sometimes the football goes out the window and it's one big tackle and the whole thing is set off and it kicks on from there. So it's one that's hard to maybe stick a pin in the atmosphere with just what's the history between these two sides. But if your Rangers are hoping to keep it tight, not give Celtic too much or their fans to latch onto and get behind their side.
Well, there are an awful lot of talking points in this game tonight, and a little bit earlier I caught up with journalist Roddy Forsyth to get his view on how the match is going to go and which team is better set heading into it.
Well, when you consider that a year ago under Steven Gerrard, Rangers were 20 points in front of Celtic at this stage of the season, yes, it's considerably more competitive. It's the second Old Firm derby of the season. Celtic lost the first one very narrowly at Ibrox. That was Ange Postecoglou's first taste of the Glasgow rivalry. This is his first Old Firm derby as Celtic manager at home, and Giovanni Van Bronckhorst's first derby in charge of Rangers. But yes, you've been talking about excitement. Both of them had last-minute developments on Saturday. Rangers were up at Ross County and were in the lead twice. But in injury time, and well into injury time in Dingwall, they conceded a goal for a 3-3 draw. Later that afternoon, Celtic, through Lille Abada, scored in the final minute of their game against Dundee United. And those two late goals changed the complexion of the top of the table, because Rangers dropped 2 points further back and are now within 2 points of Celtic, which means, of course, that should Celtic win tonight for the first time this season, they will go top of the table. And that's very significant, more significant in some ways for Rangers, because the prize at the end of this season for the Scottish title winners will be automatic entry to the group stage of the Champions League and a minimum earnings of £30 million, about €40 million, and perhaps even more than that, depending on how well they do in the group stage. Now, given that Rangers have been existing on directors' loans and a variety of flotations since they went bust, their financial regime went bust back in 2012. They've been playing catch-up during all this time, and this would be a tremendous opportunity for them to close the gap on Celtic financially. But of course, equally, if Celtic prevail and go on to win the title, that gap continues to exist.
So who's in better shape then heading into this game, do you think?
Well, Rangers are unbeaten under Giovanni Van Bronckhorst, who took charge in December. But the feeling is that they've been toiling a little bit towards they only narrowly beat Livingston 1-0 at home before that draw up at Ross County. Celtic, they have a lot of injury problems at the moment. Rangers do have their own difficulties. They won't be playing with Alfredo Morelos. He's off on duty with Colombia tonight, and Yanis Hadji is out for the season. Celtic have had their own problems in that respect, but all in all, Celtic look to have had a better transfer window than Rangers. Well, Rangers did sign Aaron Ramsey, big name, who had been on the sidelines at Juventus, but he's not yet match fit to start for the Ibrox side. And bear in mind, there's a bit of a tiff between the clubs about allocation of fans, away fans. So Rangers will only have, I think, 500 fans tonight in a stadium of 60-odd thousand people. So this will be a very noisy evening, as you can expect. It's a bear pit at Celtic Park, as it is at Ibrox during an Old Firm night. But Celtic will have the 60,000 fans. Remember, this game was scheduled for January the 2nd, but because of the Omicron variant, the Scottish Government had limited attendances to 500 people at sporting events. Rangers were all for playing at Celtic Park in front of 500 people, and it would have cost Celtic a large gate income, which of course Rangers were not unhappy about either. But most of the clubs in the Scottish Premier League or Scottish Premiership voted that they would postpone the home games and extend the winter break until after the Government had lifted the restrictions, and that's why there'll be a capacity crowd at Celtic Park tonight to Rangers' discomfiture.
I think if we tune into that, you'll really actually feel like things are back to normal, seeing that and hearing all the noise that you've described there. I'd say it'll be pretty amazing. So when we spoke to you last, Ange Postecoglou had just been appointed, and there was a little bit of uncertainty just about how he was going to get on. Took a little while for him to settle, but he's been getting an awful lot of praise of late for the players that he's brought in, for the style of play that he's adapted, and also just for his attitude to the job and his communication. What is your take on him?
Well, interestingly, early on I was talking to him about his football philosophy, and he said, I would always rather win 5-4 than 1-0. And I did say to him, well, you'll be creating a good number of cardiac arrests if that's your philosophy. And that's been seen sometimes in games in Europe this season, for example. Celtic have conceded large numbers of goals, but and there are times when they have in open play in domestic games looked as though they were taking real chances in doing so in the way they were playing, but they have prevailed, and bit by bit he's got the side to understand what they want to do with each other. He plays with inverted fullbacks, pushing in to the midfield and supporting the midfield as they go forward in support of a front three. So when Celtic are going forward, they're very exciting. They still have a tendency to lose goals avoidably from set piece plays, and I would imagine that Rangers tonight will prioritise that. Whenever they win anything, corner kick or free kick within reach of the Celtic box, this will be their significant opportunity to inflict damage. But Celtic have been doing better and better in that regard. It was a surprise to see them on Saturday at home to Dundee United not scoring until the 90th minute, particularly since Dundee United sat deep and effectively yielded most of the pitch to them. But that's what happens sometimes in football. The coaches now call it a low block. I used to call it defensive congestion. Or jammed defence or parking the bus or whatever you like, but Celtic have found ways to overcome that. Rangers looking as though they're just stumbling a little bit, perhaps also because they don't have Morelos and Hadji. Celtic won't have Tom Rogic tonight. He was playing for Australia in Oman a couple of days ago. Kyogo Furuhashi is still injured. We wait to see whether Callum McGregor will play for Celtic. He was having to wear a face mask in training because he took a bad knock in the Scottish Cup game against Alloa. But Rangers have their own McGregor problem. Alan McGregor, their goalkeeper, normally a wonderful, experienced veteran, gave away two very cheap goals at the weekend. And now Van Bronckhorst, the manager, has to decide whether he's going to play as veteran or go for the stand-in, John McLaughlin.
What about James McCarthy? Obviously, we'd have a huge interest in him. He hasn't really had the impact at Celtic that I'm sure he would have hoped to. But a night like tonight, I'm sure, are the exact occasion that he would have dreamed of. Do you think we're going to see him?
Well, he hasn't been featuring, of course, and that's been rather a surprise, not only to yourself, but for me. I felt that as a Celtic man, he certainly understands the club thoroughly and comes from that kind of background. But he hasn't made his impact, and that's also partly because Celtic have a strong native base in that midfield. And apart from Callum McGregor, there's David Turnbull, although he also is injured at the moment. Tom Rogic near Beaton. Well, Beaton suspended, Rogic won't play. So if ever there's a chance for James to get on the field, even from the bench, you would think it would be in the East End of Glasgow this evening.
Yeah, well, we'll be keeping an eye out for him for sure. So we talked about Postecoglou, and then obviously Van Bronckhorst is new there for Rangers, taking over from Steven Gerrard. They're starting to stumble a little bit, but can you see what he's about and the vision that he has for his team?
Well, he's operating in a different system and slightly differently in terms of tactics from Steven Gerrard. And at first it was more effective, but undoubtedly Rangers were finding it easier to score goals than they had done prior to Steven Gerrard's departure. But that has reversed again, as we saw at the weekend. I mentioned the Livingston game at home when they won only 1-0, and that was a late goal by Scott Arfield that took them through. Then again at the weekend, watching the highlights of their game up in Dingwall, the two goals they conceded towards the end of the match, one of them deep in injury time, both were from mistakes in midfield, and both were also compounded by mistakes by the goalkeeper. And these are not conditions you want to be occurring again in front of 60,000 fans at a packed Celtic Park.
Yeah, that's for sure. So call it for us.
I edge it for Celtic.
All right, well, we're looking forward to it.
Don't put money on it, though.
We're looking forward to it anyway. So, look, there's a lot of other news as well in Scottish football, and some of it definitely has caught the attention of Irish football fans. One guy in particular, Ross Tierney, a lot of people keeping an eye on him, playing for Motherwell, and has scored for Motherwell as well.
Yes, indeed. He got his first Scottish Premiership goal since he joined from Bohemians last month. That was last night. It was an important strike because it saved an unlikely draw. It certainly looked unlikely a draw for Motherwell, who were trailing St Mirren going into injury time in their Scottish Premiership match. Now, Tierney's goal made sure that Motherwell would stay in the top four, 2 points ahead of Hibs, so they're in good shape for a European spot next season, and that's put him into the fans' affections. Never a bad thing for a new player.
Absolutely not, and we will also pay close interest to Scottish football now, because there's an awful lot of Irish players who have opted to move to Scotland. But one that has left is Jamie McGrath, signing with Wigan on transfer deadline day.
My only surprise was that he hadn't moved previously, because, for example, there were several clubs interested in him last summer, one in particular being Hibs, and it did look as though he would move to Hibs until very late in the transfer window, and then St Mirren were able to hang on to him. But after that point, it was really only a matter of time before he would go. As you said, there was interest from England. Finally, it's Wigan Athletic. They've got a good player there. I like him. He's always enjoyable to watch. He's got tidy feet. He's got a good game sense, and I think he'll thrive at Wigan.
Now to other news in Scottish football. So this has story has caught the attention of an awful lot of people. So Rath Rovers have signed David Goodwillie, and this has really annoyed an awful lot of people involved in the club because of his past. Can you just tell us a little bit about this story?
Yes, well, he was a former Dundee United in Scotland and Plymouth player. He was signed by Rath Rovers from Clyde, where he has been since 2017, when he was found guilty, along with another player, David Robertson, in Scotland's first civil rape trial. They were ordered to pay £100,000 damages to the victim. She waived her right to anonymity. And she did so because the Scottish prosecuting authorities had decided there wasn't enough evidence to proceed with a criminal case. But she instituted a civil case. And at the end of the trial, they were ordered to pay £100,000 damages to the victim after the judge found her evidence to be persuasive and compelling. And he said that David Goodwillie's evidence had been in conflict with the oath he had taken. You can read into that exactly what the judge would have said in other circumstances. Well, Clyde signed him when he didn't have a club. There was a debate amongst their supporters. That's a fan-owned club there. And some were for having nothing to do with them. Others felt that, you know, there is always the opportunity for someone to redeem themselves. He'd been there 5 years. His 15 goals from 21 appearances this season attracted Rath Rovers, who are pushing for a place in the Scottish Premiership. But his signing on Monday provoked uproar. Now, Val McDermott, who's a best-selling Scottish crime writer, whose father was a scout for Rath Rovers, one of the stands there is named after him, stopped her sponsorship of the team's jerseys and issued some very vehement tweets about why she was doing so and what she thought of David Goodwillie. The Rath women's team captain quit after 10 years. Two directors, one of them a former chairman, also resigned. The fans' liaison officer quit, and even the stadium announcer has said goodbye. It's a PR disaster, but the club was warned. This signing has been speculated about for some time, and Val McDermott made her own opinions very clear, as did many other of the backers and fans. And the club has actually made matters worse by issuing a statement saying this was purely a football decision, when so many of their own backers and fans say that this is a case of morals, and that what they object to in David Goodwillie is that he has never expressed regret or responsibility for his actions 7 years ago.
Do you think this is the end of it?
No, he's signed, and the board, the majority on the board seemed determined to hold out. They were saying this is a football decision. We are making it because we wish to deliver to our fans the promotion that they want. But the fans don't want promotion at any price. When you actually look at the top four table in the Scottish Championship, Rath Rovers are fourth, and if you look at their goal difference, it's the worst of the top four teams, and that's why they wanted Goodwillie, because he'd been scoring, as I say, 15 goals from 21 appearances. But this is an argument that's gone well beyond the boundaries of football. It's also been an interesting one when compared to Livingston, whose manager served time for money laundering, and he was in prison, took his coaching badges, has spoken to youth clubs about what not to do when you're tempted by what seem to be good deals which you know to be illegal. So he's actually got himself back into the mix, David Martindale, and he has proved to be an astute football manager and a good man manager, whereas David Goodwillie has yet to express regret for anything other than his own situation, which he has done in occasional interviews over the years. And that's what particularly annoys fans who feel that Rath Rovers are a family club, for example, and they do have their women's football team, and that they should be setting an example and saying we don't want anything to do with this. And this has gone right up to the First Minister of Scotland, Nicola Sturgeon, who said that she understood the positions of the objectors, which were difficult but principled.
It's really disappointing just to hear a club say that it's a football decision, when you think of how much progress has been made for women in sport and women in the world in general as well, that they would think that putting a footballer into a team that has caused so much damage and stands for something that has been or has done something that is quite deplorable would be given a contract and promoted and defended in those ways. But that is what is happening there. Roddy, thank you so much. Enjoy the game tonight. It thank will you. Be nice to be back, I'd say.
It is indeed, I must say. It's good to see an Old Firm game on the go and be part of all that excitement. In fact, I'm itching to get going already.
Great. Well, you have definitely set the scene for us. Thank you so much, and we will talk to you soon.
Take care.
Roddy Forsyth there. Paul Curry, he has set the scene. It does sound like it's going to be absolutely amazing. He's edging for a Celtic victory. What about you?
Yeah, I think I'd agree with that. I think Celtic's record over the last number of months has been superb, 12 wins in their last 13 games. I think the nature of that win against Dundee on the weekend, just scoring in the last minute, that breeds confidence and energy into a side. And albeit Van Bronckhorst has started extremely well at Rangers, I think Celtic and that home crowd tonight will just edge them over the line.
Yeah, well, that game kicks off at 7:45. Now it is time for our competition, and thanks to Aldi, we want to send you to the most romantic city in the world, Paris, to see the Irish team take on France in the Guinness Six Nations at the Stade de France on Saturday, February 12th. We've got return flights, a three-night hotel stay, and tickets to the big game. It's all to celebrate Aldi's 149 stores having everything you need for Valentine's. To begin with the chance to win this amazing prize, have a listen to this clip and answer the following question.
Ireland in position. This must be it. This must be it for Ronan O'Gara. Drop it, goal. Grand slam at stake. He's got it! Yes! Oh! Would you believe that? Still, there is time for more.
Oh, Jones was good. That was even better. Fantastic.
That we'll all remember, those of us that love sport, for the rest of our lives. O'Gara, of all the moments he's had, that's surely the sweetest.
That was definitely a very special moment. So that was Ronan O'Gara scoring a late drop goal for Ireland in 2009 to seal the Grand Slam win in the Six Nations. But you need to tell us which team it was against. So text your answer and name to 51552. We'll pick one correct answer randomly each day, and that person will get themselves a €50 Aldi gift card and a place in Friday's draw for the trip to Paris. As always, RTE competition terms and conditions apply. See 2fm.ie, over 18s only, and you've got to be able to travel on the 11th of February. So good luck to everyone. Paul, Paris, I know you're a regular visitor. It is one of the greatest cities, and from a sporting perspective, it's a great place to go.
Yeah, absolutely. I was lucky enough, actually. I played in the Parc de Princes when I was younger, 12 years of age. Amazing city. Yeah.
How?
The Nome Nations Cup. It was a tournament that used to happen, and it was like a mini World Cup series. So the finals were played over the course of 3 days in the Parc de Princes.
Doesn't get better than that.
I know. Yeah.
I was actually wanted to you know, prompt you to tell us about all the recent trips you've made to Paris, but look, you've prompted there with that one, so we don't need to hear anymore. It is time for a very quick break. Do stay with us. We'll be previewing the Little Woods leagues very shortly.
With Green Farm, being up to 90 isn't real. The protein in our range is. Get real with Green Farm. Real protein, real tasty. Game on 2FM.
Now it's time to turn our attention to Camogie, and the Littlewoods Leagues are starting this weekend, and it is definitely all to play for. I'm delighted to say that former Limerick Camogie player Aoife Sheen joins us on the line. Aoife, it's good to be back. It's good to have something to look forward to, and definitely having crowds back and just being able to return to a season of normality would be welcome for everyone.
Oh, definitely. Like, you know, for the players involved as well, it means that, you know, they'll have their families there, their supporters, and it just adds to it. You know, the kind of the overhang from COVID is slowly but surely kind of drifting away as well. So look, I think it'll be really good for the leagues, and it'll really help, I think, just the whole kind of outlook around it.
Yeah, and there's also an awful lot of intriguing storylines as well, which are always welcome at the start of the season. And I think, look, we just need to start with Cork, because Davy Fitz going to coach Cork has probably elevated the profile of the game to a different stratosphere, because when he's down there and if he's on the line and he's being his usual self, it will have eyeballs from everywhere looking at the team. But he does bring something different. Do you think it's going to work out with him in Cork?
Yeah, I think so. I think for Cork, it was a great coup for them to land him in terms of, you know, I mean, like, he's obviously high profile. He's had success in, you know, a number of different counties. And from Davy's point of view, going to Cork, he's going to a really, like they're almost professional set up in terms of Camogie. You know, they have great numbers playing Camogie. They've, you know, twice as many players probably as some counties. And they really take it seriously as well. So They have a nice side. They were very near in, you know, winning the All-Ireland last year. They were just beaten by, I suppose, pipped on the line really by Galway for a finish, you know. So it's very exciting for him that way, that he, you know, he has a young team to work with. And I think that's where Davey kind of, you know, relishes the opportunity as well. He brought a young Wexford team to Leinster success in hurling terms. So in Cork, I think that they will be, you know, excited to work with him. He's got good players to work with. Now, they will be down, I suppose, Linda Collins and Hannah Looney, who are away for, you know, work reasons this year, but still, Cork has some great young players, and I think they'll be, you know, definitely, you know, thinking of or eyes on the prize come the latter end of the championship.
It'll be just interesting as well to see what they're going to be like without Paddy too, because he's been there for so long and he had a very defined style that he liked to play, and there was players that slotted into that as well, and just be really curious to see how different they are, Aoife.
Yeah, and I mean, Paddy was so successful as a manager with Cork. So yeah, it will definitely be interesting to see. I suppose Matthew Toomey taking over, he was in that setup last year. So at least I suppose they have that continuity, you know, this year, and that it won't be a complete new outfit in terms of management there. But yeah, definitely Paddy will be a loss to them. But sometimes, you know, fresh eyes, they do kind of see other things as well. So maybe Davey coming in, he might, you know, put his stamp on it and put his style in the camogie. So it'll be interesting to see. I suppose Cork, for the last few years, they played a different style of play. There was an awful lot of, you know, short hand passing, you know, a lot of stick passing going on, and of course they perfected it last summer, definitely. So it'll just be interesting to see, will they keep with that, or will we see something new from them under, I suppose, guidance from Davey?
Yeah, it'll be fascinating for sure. So look, you mentioned Galway there as well, and when you look at the panel that they have, it looks like they're going to have everybody available to them. And Galway, when they have everyone and they're in full flight and things go right for them, they're a pretty frightening proposition.
They are, you know, and there's very little between the top teams in Camogie. You know, we've been kind of looking at Galway, Kilkenny and Cork exchanging the All-Ireland, you know, every few years. But Galway, I suppose, you know, after landing as well their new sponsors in Westerwood Global, you know, that's a major thing as well for them, that, you know, they might be able to do, you know, extra things or different things this year as well in terms of preparation that maybe they haven't had the resources to do as well. But, you know, even, the Sarsfields girls, I suppose, are still involved in the club championship and they'll have to come back in. So what that will do as well is it'll allow Colin Murray maybe to try out some new players. He stuck, I think, with the tried and tested nearly last year through the championship. So, you know, it might give other girls a chance as well, maybe, to come in and stake a claim on the team.
We know with Kilkenny that the All-Ireland is all they're interested in, really. And when they come so close and they don't make it, there's always a focus on what went wrong for them. They probably didn't reach their goals last year. And no doubt Aoife will be probably starting this season with intent for sure. Where do you think they're at, though?
Yeah, like they won the league last year, but they had a very funny campaign. You know, Limerick nearly beat them in a quarter final. Tip had everything done against them in the semi final, but, you know, Denise Gall magic. She, you know, pulled them out of the semi final. And then they ended up beating Galway in the final. So, like, I think they nearly have a full complement of players as well this year. There's been no retirements or anything like that announced in Kilkenny. You know, so I do think they definitely have the, you know, the team to do it this year. But it's just to see if they can put kind of a back-to-back performances in and get a consistent style of play, I suppose, is the big thing for Kilkenny. I think Denise Gall is playing some football as well this weekend at Mullinahone, so she'll be out of action in the start of the league. But, you know, they've great underage success as well. I mean, they're the minor champions. You know, Dixburg did very well even in Leinster. I know they were beaten last weekend by Owlert, but, you know, they could have beaten Owlert in that as well. So, like, there's great Camogie players in Kilkenny, and definitely, you know, they'll be hoping to go better, you know, than last year.
Yep, Denise Gall is playing for Mullinahone against St Jude's, would you believe, in the All-Ireland Junior Final. That's on Saturday in Ballinglass. And Aoife, you know who I'll be shouting for in that one.
Yeah.
So look, we know that the top three, so really there hasn't been any change for quite some time. It doesn't look like there's going to be much change, really, that Kilkenny, Cork and Galway are the three that we always put up there at the top. And then coming after them, it seems to be the likes of Tipperary and Waterford, but they haven't seemed to be able to really just narrow that gap to within touching distance. Let's go with Tipperary first. Every year it's the same conversation of late, where we are asking, are they going to be able to get those consistent performances and join the top three at the top. Is this the year you think they're going to be able to do it?
I suppose it just depends if they've found me, if they can find another couple of players. I think they were just short that little bit last year in that semi-final. Now, they had the chances, you know, and even speaking afterwards, you know, their manager Bill said, look, if they had taken a couple of goal chances, who knows? And like, that'll stand them too, playing in Croke Park. That was a big deal for them last year, you know, getting to that semi-final as well. I suppose Orla Dwyer will be a big factor in it as well. You know, will she come home and will she play? You know, she's obviously with the Aussie rules at the moment. Will she play in the summer? Because she's a huge player for them, a huge character. But it was, look, for the league, for them, for Tipperary, it's to try and get one further than last year. You know, as I said, they should have won the semi-final last year. They should have got to the final, but they didn't. They didn't see it out. So I suppose it'll be putting that performance and that complete performance in as well. You know, just trying to go a step further, really, for them.
Waterford are pretty much in the same boat as well. And Niamh Rockett was out talking to the media a little bit earlier this week. And, you know, she has that same desire where she wants to be up there making the most of her time and contesting on the final day if possible. And they're quite like Tipperary, that they are part of this conversation where it's the questions are asked, are they going to be able to get there this year? A little bit like Tip as well, you know, they probably need one or two more players to need to unearth a few other players to kind of get that balance that they need. And likewise, if it's the same question, is this going to be a year where they can maybe take another step towards the top?
Yeah, look, it's Derek Lyon's second year involved at Waterford, so I suppose last year might have been a learning curve for him. It was unfortunate for them in the quarterfinal. They lost Beth Carton just before throw-in. You know, she was out injured, I think, with her hamstring. She couldn't play. And, you know, they have great talent. And even like the Galtiers are doing very well in club championships. You know, they have a good schools teams as well going on in Waterford. But I suppose, again, you know, they're playing with a smaller deck. I suppose when you look at the amount of Camogie players playing in the likes of maybe Waterford and you compare it to a bigger county like Cork or whatever. So it's just to get everybody in, get everyone, you know, on the same sheet and trying to move on, you know, that step with it. But I definitely do think they have the players to do it. Now, they're playing in Division 2 in the league, which might hamper them, you know, a little bit. They haven't played in Division 1 for a number of years. But still, I think, you know, that they still got to a quarter final last year. So that shouldn't hamper them in any way this year either.
So the chasing pack then, Limerick down, quite a number of players from last year's panel. Clare are probably there as well, down. All be looking to build on their season last year. And Dublin as well. Let's talk about Dublin, Aoife, because there was so much hype around them when Adrian O'Sullivan took over and it just felt like they didn't deliver on that potential that they have.
No, I think so. I suppose Adrian came in last year, but look, it is difficult when you come in and you've COVID to navigate and everything else. But I suppose people will be looking at Dublin this year. You know, they're in that top group, you know, and see how they'll get on. You know, they'll have to face Galway, Tipperary down and Offaly. You know, so they're big games for them and they'll be able to see, you know, where exactly they are. And likewise, I suppose, look, Dublin have, you know, a proud tradition of Camogie and everything else. So it'll be interesting to see, I suppose, how, you know, how they do get on about against the bigger guns, and how they fare.
So what about Limerick and Clare and Down then, our last three that we want to chat about?
Yeah, I suppose from a Limerick point of view, I think there's about 9 girls who've opted out this year for, you know, one reason or another. Some are playing football, which is very disappointing, I suppose, from a Camogie point of view. New management in and John Lillis as well. And look, they'll be hoping to build. There's some really nice underage players coming through, and, you know, Grace McNamara is the new chairperson now. It's her second year. She's done a lot of work in putting in structures in place to bring players through. So hopefully, you know, it might be a bit of a learning curve, I suppose, this year for them, and a very tough task out against Kilkenny at the weekend in their first round. You know, but there's still the old guns around, Niamh Ryan and Caoimhe Costello and a few more. You know, they're still there to steady things. Clare as well, you know, Clare, I suppose, a few years ago got to the quarterfinal, you know, against Cork and did really well in that. So look, and I suppose Scariff Gunlow going well as well, Marie, in the, mm-hmm. you know, the club championships. That'll bring great, I suppose, you know, kind of, it'll lift things as well that they're doing, you know, doing so well, and they're in an All-Ireland semi-final against Owlert in a couple of weeks' time. So, you know, that all helps, like, the county scene, and it boosts things a nice bit. And Down will definitely be ones that I'll be watching as well, because, I mean, they have unbelievable players in the likes of Niamh Mallon. You know, she's a brilliant forward. She'd get on any team in the country, I think, anyway. And they're going to be a tough outfit to play, you know, anyone that plays them. You know, they've some great Camogie players. They're a tough physical team, so they'll be difficult. They'll be difficult, you know, ask for anyone. Tipperary are playing them this weekend, the opening round, and, you know, they won't have it easy against them by any means.
And we also need to talk about Wexford and Offaly as well, two other teams that are making quite a lot of progress.
Yeah, and I suppose for Susan Erner's over Offaly this weekend, she'll probably be disappointed that Michaela Morgan has retired this week. She just announced it, I think it was yesterday. But Offaly as well, yeah, definitely a team, you know, they're progressing along nicely, and Susan, you know, wouldn't leave any stone unturned in terms of preparation. They're out against Galway. They'll have a difficult ask against Galway this weekend. But you know, they are building as well, and you know, they'll be hoping just to progress and stay up in Division One, I suppose, in the league this year.
Right, Aoife, so if you were to, a lot of games this weekend, if you were to pick one, what's the one that you'll be tuning into?
I suppose, well, because my own county are playing, I suppose I'll be looking at Kilkenny and Limerick closely on Sunday. But I think Tipperary and Down will be a very good game as well. I think kind of evenly enough match, and I think it'll be a good game. I think it's on in the rag, though, for Down. They'll be travelling down. But, you know, I think that'll be a good, good, tough game.
Great, Aoife Sheehan. As always, thank you so much for joining me, and we will talk to you soon.
Thanks, Marie.
Aoife Sheehan there, previewing the start of the Littlewoods Ireland Leagues, or as I've been calling them, the Littlewoods Leagues. I'm just too familiar with Littlewoods from all the online shopping that I'm doing, so I think I need to have a chat with myself after that. Right, it is time for a very quick break, and then football with Paul Curry.
Game on 2FM.
With Green Farm. Being flat to the mat isn't real. Our protein is. Get real with Green Farm. Real protein, real tasty. Game on 2FM.
Now, welcome back to the show with me, Marie Crowe. Paul Curry is with me in studio. Paul, transfer deadline day is behind us, and over here anyway, what seemed to be stealing the headlines was the fact that Cathal Heffernan, young Cork City player, is heading to AC Milan. And just from your point of view as someone who's done the whole go away and try it out at the professional game, what are your thoughts on him heading away?
I think first and foremost, Marie, my opinion is that it's a very brave move. I think it's one that's obviously, the path is somewhat deviated away from what the traditional routes were to the UK, and now Irish kids are having to look at European clubs to maybe further their development to get into a full-time environment, and it's a very brave move. I haven't actually seen Cathal play, but even if you just look at his makeup, he has the perfect stature to be a centre-half. He's tall, he's big, he's strong, and the feedback is that he's a very good footballer. I still think... Not that it's a risk, but you know, for any kid who moves away, the percentages are very low of those who actually make it. So it's a great move, it's a great opportunity, but there's still plenty of work there to be done. You know, it's talent that's moving away, and we just have to wait to see how that talent progresses. But it seems from interviews that he's done, and obviously the guidance that he has back home, this is a really level-headed kid who comes across very, very mature. And if it is going to be the right move, it seems like he has all the materials anyway with regards to attitude and preparation and what he wants
genetics
to achieve from the game. And genetics, yeah. Genetically, which is also a big point. It is a big point. But there's still a lot of work to be done.
What about the language, though? So if you're a young kid who's leaving home and you're heading to a completely different environment and country with a load of new people and you don't speak their language, like... Put yourself in his shoes. Cast your mind back to when you were a teenager heading away. Like, that must just be frightening almost.
Yeah, very difficult, because the nature of being a professional footballer is that you've got a lot of free time in your hands, and spending that time is sometimes a little boring, and you need to be super disciplined. So with regards to socialising, or even just being able to take on what coaches are trying to you know, get you to learn, can also be difficult. So that's probably the reasoning. If you look at Kevin Zeffie, you look at Cathal Heffernan going away to Milan, I say it's brave, because it's such a culture shock. Mm-hmm. You know, you are going to learn the game, but you're also throwing yourself into a completely new lifestyle. That's not going to be easy. So, you know, a couple of Italian lessons, I've no doubt, but it's also nice then, Marie, that he has that familiar face in Kevin Zeffie.
Big time.
You know,
yeah.
They've played together at the same international age group. Having that friendly face and somebody to lean on is vitally important when you're away from home. Just that you feel that you have some form of structure. But a really brave move for the both of them to throw themselves. And even James Abankwa, who's going to Udinese, another very, you know, difficult move, because we're not used to seeing kids go this way, and we're not entirely sure about how it's going to progress. But I guess with Italians and defenders, whether it's James O'Bank or Carl Heffernan, you know that they're going to get a good education.
Yeah, look, I can't wait to see how they get on. And as you said, it is so brave. So best of luck to them all. A few other moves of interest. Jamie McGrath is one that has definitely caught our attention because of the situation that he had at St Mirren. And you knew that he was going to move at some stage, heading to Wigan now and moving up, really.
Absolutely. I think the way his career has panned out has been quite perfect. You know, whether it be right or wrong, British clubs don't tend to look at Irish CVs with a lot of credentials. It's really about how you kind of land on the ground when you get to the UK. And the way he's gone going into St Mirren, I think was a really suitable move, because he's gone, and when you move, you need to ensure that you play games. And Jim Goodwin has played him 60 times. His stock has risen, particularly playing with Stephen Kenny and the international team. And with just 6 months left on his contract, it made sense for Jamie, and it made sense for St Mirren for him to go and take that step to the next level. I think you're right in saying that it's a step up the ladder, Marie. Wigan are absolutely flying in League One at the moment. I think they're maybe 3 points off the top. Rotherham, and they've 2 games in hand, so there's every chance that they'll be a championship team next year. He needs to go in and he needs to play games again, because he's 25, he's a first team player. There's no reason why he should be sitting on a bench or you know, learning the game a bit more. So a great move for him. I think it's a good landing for him. Wigan, as I said, unbeaten in 20 games, every chance of going up, and then he may be another chance to take another step up in the championship and establish himself again. So a career that's you know, has been an interesting one to follow, and I think there's certainly another gear or two in him.
Yeah, he's definitely making a mark wherever he goes, and hopefully it'll keep going in that right direction for him. A little bit of news at home here today. Dan Carr announced as a new Shelburne player, a name familiar to many League of Ireland fans.
Absolutely, and I think Damien Duff going into Shelburne is going to need to improve and bolster that squad, and I think that's probably going to take, you know, the guts of 6, 12, 18 months before he probably gets a number of characters into the building that he believes he can build a side around. He would have worked with Dan Carr at Shamrock Rovers, so he obviously knows what he's about. He obviously likes the type of person that he is, which seems to be the fundamental thing that Damien looks for. And then having seen him play in the League of Ireland, I mean, he scored some outrageous goals for Shamrock Rovers. I think there was like a bicycle kick at the back post one day. So, you know, a good hold-up player, athletic, can run in behind, and certainly somebody that can be the focal point for Damien Duff's Shelburne side. So knows the league, that always helps. Whether he can bang in a couple of goals will be another thing, but certainly a step in the right direction for Shells.
Are certain clubs in the League of Ireland find it difficult to get players? It certainly feels like that.
Well, the league and the average age of the league seems to be getting younger and younger, and naturally enough, as it has done over the last God knows how many years, the best players tend to take a step to the next level, and we're seeing a lot of those younger players going maybe a bit early. Yeah, I guess it's hard. I guess we're kind of benchmarking everything against Shamrock Rovers, who seem to have, you know, a lavish of attacking players and experienced players within the squad who know the league very well. And for other teams, it's proven quite difficult to get close to them. I think Derry are probably one to look out for with the investment that they've had. Matty Smith last week would be a great addition to their squad. And then Stevie O'Donnell with Dundalk. So outside of that, it'll be interesting to see how the others get on. Bowes, you know, I've lost a number of bodies, will be difficult to replace. But yeah, I guess naturally enough, it's more probably about bringing players through, Marie, than it is signing players in the League of Ireland. We're a bit of a stepping stone for players who are maybe coming in on loan or younger players coming through before they take the step to the next level. But though I'm sure there'll be players that we're not even speaking about today or over the next 2 months who will spring onto the scene and will impress, and then maybe be next ones to move on, which is always nice from a fan looking in to see what sort of young talent's coming through.
Shows the value though of the academy system.
It does, and Shamrock Rovers, albeit maybe they're not getting players into their first team, they are moving across the likes of Kevin Zeffy. If you look at Bowes has been extremely successful working with St Kevin's, even the likes of Ross Tierney, who equalised from Motherwell last night, great goal, he's another one who come through. So yeah, it is even the likes of Colin Heffernan, if he hadn't moved away, we would have maybe seen him in the League of Ireland this season. But yeah, you're absolutely right, it's the pathway for the clubs to go with regards to securing investment by maybe selling some of these players on or just bringing them through and seeing how they progress. So it's refreshing, Marie, because we were way behind with this academy structure. Should have happened years ago, but at least it's finally happened.
Okay, well, no doubt we'll be talking about that a little bit more over the coming weeks as the League of Ireland approaches. It's now time for a very quick break, but do stay with us because Marty Morrissey speaks to Paddy Maher after this quick break.
Game on 2FM.
With Green Farm, rise and grind and the hustle mindset aren't real. The protein in our chicken and turkey is. Get real with Green Farm. Real protein, real tasty. Game on 2FM.
So the big GA news this week was that Pádraig Maher retired from hurling on medical grounds, garnering a huge amount of attention and a huge amount of adulation as well for all of the great days he had in the Tipperary jersey. Big disappointment for Maher to have to hang up his boots because of injury. And he spoke to Marty Morrissey a little bit earlier about his decision.
Very difficult decision, Marty. I suppose in one way and another way, then it was a very straightforward decision. You know, I obviously got medical advice and the injury in my neck, so I was advised to step away from just the contact sport. You know, I'm lucky enough I'm going to be able to exercise and continue my training as such, but it's just contact, and unfortunately in the game of hurling, it's one of the main parts of it. So, yeah, look, it's unfortunate, but look, I've been very lucky. You know, I've had great medical personnel involved the last number of days, and, you know, they were a great help to me, and they gave me great advice, and look, I was lucky this was picked up as quick as it was, and thankfully I know now before it got worse.
What were the symptoms? Describe this injury for me.
Just soreness in the neck, and it was kind of, you know, around the, just getting a few headaches and stuff, but it was coming from my neck, so yeah, just basically the doctor sent me for scans as usual, and met the consultants in Limerick, and yeah, they just advised me from, you know, for my health going forward, that, you know, I'll be perfectly fine going forward, but another small bang the wrong way around and could do serious damage. So, yeah, look, it was a pretty straightforward decision. Decisions made for me, but, yeah, look, it's probably a sad way to go, but, look, I can have no complaints, really, over the last number of years.
And, Pádraig, was this an old injury, you know, or is it an accumulation of playing at the top level and taking the shoulders and taking the hits, or is it a more recent injury?
We still don't, not really sure. I still have to meet a few more consultants in the next number of weeks just about it, but to determine when it actually kind of happened. But I think it's relatively fresh. Probably during the club season there, I started to get a few symptoms of it. So, we don't really know the full extent of it yet, but for now, that's basically what we know for the moment, anyway.
And have the doctors put a label on this? I mean, I know it's his neck, but Describe it for me. Is there an actual name for this?
I don't think, not at the moment. I think there's a bit more diagnosing to do, but yeah, basically it's just been towards my neck, and when anything involved in the neck, the head area now at the moment, you know, the medical personnel are not going to take any risks. And look, I'm glad they don't either. I don't want to put myself in harm's way. I'm 33 years of age nearly now, so you know, I have my full life ahead of me, so there's and other things going on more than sport as well, so look, health is the most important thing, and you know, and thankfully I've been getting great advice.
Are you heartbroken about not able to play for Tipperary, or indeed play for Thurles Sarsfields?
Yeah, no, look, it's not the best way to finish up, I suppose. You know, I've had great 13 seasons in Tipperary, you know, and whatever left the time I'd left in the jersey, I don't know, but I was mad and raring to go last week to, you know, go back training this week. So, unfortunately, that's the way it worked out. And, yeah, it is kind of, you know, heartbreaking, right? I can't give a few years back to Thurles Sarsfields, you know. You know, usually enough when a player retires from the county, he's able to go back to their club and give a good 2 or 3 years service after. And, look, unfortunately, I can't do that. And but, look, I'll be around the place. I'll be willing to help out, and I'll be involved some way anyway.
I saw you play in the Tipperary Championship for your club here, actually, in Semple Stadium, and you were flying it. So, in terms of form, you seem to be continuing on the good form of the Intercounty Championship.
Yeah, you know, I felt great, and, you know, we've done a lot of good training with Tipperary last year, and after the COVID, we kind of relaxed a bit, and, you know, I continued into my club year, and I was thoroughly enjoying my hurling, and, yeah, just picked up this kind of injury at the end of the club season, and I didn't think it was going to be as serious as it was, and unfortunately that's the way it is. And yeah, but that's the killer, I suppose. I feel great, and you know, I could run up and down the field here all day for you if you want, but unfortunately, look, it's just as I said to you earlier on, the contact part of it, I just can't risk it anymore.
So when the consultants told you this, I mean, what was your reaction? I mean, you've given your life to hurling has been your life.
Yeah, look, to be honest with you, it probably still hasn't hit me yet or sunk in. You know, it's not the I thought I was meeting him just to, you know, go over a few things and make sure everything's okay. I didn't expect to get the news I was expecting, but look, that's the way it goes. It probably won't sink in properly until the game starts, and you know, I'll be above the stands watching him rather than being on the field. So it'll take a bit getting used to, but I've loads of other stuff going on in my life that will keep me occupied, and I'll find something else to fill the gap he's got.
Hard to fill the gap though without hurling, isn't it? I mean, knowing you so well as I do, I mean, you live and breathe hurling.
Yeah, look, it's been the most nearly important aspect of my life since I've been a child. You know, everything is revolved around hurling, whether it's, you know, work or anything outside of my sporting career has always revolved around hurling. So look, it's going to be disappointing, and it's going to be hard to probably get into a new routine again, and as I said, fill that void of, you know, going training, you know, 3-4 times a week, and are looking forward to a big game. So look, we'll see what the future brings, but for now we'll just enjoy the few days and relax and try and relax anyway, and see what the future brings.
You know, when you get a shock like that, I'm sure it is very difficult, and I'm sure as well that you must have maybe even shed a tear, because this is life changing for you.
Yeah, you know, I suppose it was hard to get my head around it, and you know, I suppose when we were, myself and my fiancée Claire were writing the statement the other night, you know, I suppose it did kind of get a bit emotional, but look, I can't complain. I've had a great 13 years, I said, with Tipperary. Like other people, you know, have shorter careers maybe due to injury or whatever, you know, and you know, so I've been very, very lucky, and I'm not going to be feeling sorry for myself too much. I've had a great career, I've been so lucky to meet so many people, you know, have had great times, and you know, I certainly have no regrets in that regard. And look, 32 or 33 years of age now nearly, so you know, I've had a decent career, so I can't be too downbeat about it.
Parry, you've had a great career, and you've won lots of many admirers and huge gravitas in the game. But considering you've 3 All-Irelands, many All-Stars, hurling, Hurler of the Year nominations, I mean, the list is endless. But is there a moment in time that you absolutely loved, that you were very proud of, more than anything else?
It's hard to pick out one, I suppose. You know, straight away when you asked me the question there, there's a lot of, you know, things flashing in my mind, you know, after different games, you know. You know, I even remember you interviewing myself and Ronan in the field after, I think it was 19 All-Ireland, you know, and, you know, the moments like that just, you know, stick with you, you know, and they're great times. Obviously, there's been bad days as well, and but look, I've been lucky enough, as I said, ups and downs in life and sport, as I've seen this week anyway, so, you know, look, and thoroughly enjoyed everything, and, you know, obviously the days we won All-Irelands will stand out and will live long in the memory, that's for sure.
And I know people, if they're listening to us here on the radio, will be wanting me to ask you, who was the most difficult opponent for Paddy Maher?
That's a tough one, actually, because like, I suppose the game changed. I've played so many years now, you know, the game changed over the years, and, you know, people give you different kind of experiences and different challenges. And, look, I've played against some of the best players, you know, standing this pitch here, my first big game for Tipperary was Mark and Henry Shefflin, you know, and it's not going to get much harder than that. You know, I've had great battles with him down through the years. You know, a lot of the Kilkenny boys there, Richie Power, Joe Canning comes to mind as well. You know, Patrick Horgan, you know, we've had great battles over the years. And, you know, that's what it's all about, you know, and, you know, thoroughly enjoyed and very challenging at times, but look, I got to play against some of the best players to grace the game, so you know, I'd be happy enough with that.
So you've made your announcement, it's going to be life changing. Is there anything on the agenda in the immediate future now? Have you thought about getting involved or doing something different?
I suppose it's in a whirlwind couple of days, so haven't really thought about too much, but I have enough to keep me going. Obviously is my career as a guard, and you know, myself and Shamie Cannon have the coffee shop down in the square in Thurles as well, Hayday, so we'll be kept going with that as well, so enough to keep me going. And look, the league is starting next weekend, so I'll be following the lads around the country wherever they are, and giving them as much support as I can, and look, we'll see what the future brings.
Paddy Maher there speaking to Marty Morrissey a little bit earlier on. Now that is all we have time for. The winner of our competition this evening is Sarah McNamara, and the answer is Wales. So Sarah has won that €50 Aldi gift card and a place in Friday's draw for the trip to Paris. Tara Kumar is up next. We'll be back tomorrow. We're looking ahead to the Six Nations and also the Allianz Football League, and we will check in with Jeff Shepherd.